Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, July 8th, 2025, coming to you from my home studio, and we start today's edition on the front page, Animals, Pet Welfare Gaining Ground, Decatur Humane Society Prepping New Facility and Tackling Overpopulation. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. One of Joni Walmsley's jobs as a volunteer at the Humane Society of Decatur in Macon County is to bottle feed the motherless kittens. However, it's a job she would like to limit. "That's just like a baby every 2 hours," she said about the feeding times. "Then you have to stimulate their bowels and their urine." After years of dreaming, then discussing their visions, the Humane Society is one step closer to helping the community and its overabundance of animals. The building at 3411 North Woodford Street, located next door to the current facility, will be used to provide spay-day surgeries for low-income pet owners and increase the trap, neuter, and return program. Scooping litter boxes, changing bedding, as well as feeding and watering the animals are just a few of the responsibilities shared by Walmsley and the other volunteers. The future facility will help them with their jobs. "Hopefully less babies," she said. The TNR program has a waiting list in Macon County. According to Lisa Lambert, shelter manager, the list reaches into September. The goal of purchasing this building is to help with the stray cat population in our community and to help the low-income people who are having a hard time affording vet, spay, neuter costs, she said. No other medical procedures will be offered. "Just spay or neuter," Lambert said. "We definitely want a surgical suite there. That's our main focus right now." The new building recently housed an eye doctor's office. Fundraising and grant research will be the next step, so the Humane Society staff refurbish the facility to suit its needs. They have been communicating with veterinarians to help with the procedures. The Humane Society is also accepting volunteers with veterinarian experience. However, money donations are always accepted to help with the overpopulation, Lambert said. Dine to donate fundraisers are planned for the near future. The next opportunity will be at the Papa Murphy's Take and Bake Pizza store at 255 West Mound Road, Decatur, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 9th. 20% of online purchases will be given to the Humane Society. Enter code SUPPORT, S-U-P-P-O-R-T. Other Humane Society organizations and veterinarian facilities are feeling the same challenges to control the cat population. "A cat can have 3 or 4 litters a year," Lambert said. "That's a lot of cats that keep reproducing over and over." The TNR program is designed to control the feral or stray cat population. Low-income pet owners are also able to utilize the spay-neuter program for their cats as well as dogs who suffer from communicable illnesses such as parvo. Pet owners will need to bring proof of income. The semi-annual spay day was once a priority for the Humane Society. Approximately 50 cats were spayed, neutered during that event. "We would love to do that again," Lambert said. Although volunteers with veterinary experience are needed for the surgery suite, the Humane Society could always use help in other areas of the facility. The animals enjoy socialization, which also prepares them for adoption. However, the staff will warn volunteers the job isn't always glamorous, especially now with 9 puppies. "They cause a mess," Lambert said about the current challenges. "You're constantly cleaning up puppy poo. And some really neat large, medium-sized color photos here. The Humane Society of Decatur and Macon County's neighboring building will be used to provide spay-day surgeries for low-income pet owners and increase the trap, neuter, and return program in Decatur on Monday, July 7th. As mentioned before, it used to house an eye doctor's office, and 3 parking spaces are shown on the side. It's a light tan, single-story building, brown roof showing, surrounded by lots of concrete and some green bushes in front of, not a large building, looks like a small house. Photo credit to Joseph Ressler Photos Herald and Review, and a larger color photo, a litter of puppies at the Humane Society of Decatur in Macon County, in Decatur on Monday, July 7th. And there is a chain link cage, and we're at the, shown at the gate here that is bolted and locked. And poking its nose through is a small white puppy, very sweet looking. And in the background, we're seeing a puppy on the floor with four white paws, but it's all black. And next to it, another black puppy, a tan puppy, another black puppy. And in the background, also out of focus, another black puppy with white paws and a tan and white puppy. And we see food dishes and water dishes and toys in there. Very sweet, very cute. And a smaller color photo here. There are three puppies, and it says Puppies Nap at the Humane Society of Decatur. A black one with white paws. They're on a, looks like a Christmas blanket on the floor. One on its side with its paws out. It's the tan and beige one, and with its head on the tan and beige one looking right up at the camera is a white puppy with looks like blue eyes, very sweet looking. And finally, administrative assistant Garrett Sales holds Lambert, a stray cat, with an ear tip indicating he has been neutered at the Humane Society of Decatur in Macon County in Decatur on Monday, July 7th. And Garrett is wearing a blue shirt that says Spay Day, and he's holding what looks like a very large kind of orange brown cat. And as mentioned, the tip of the ear has been clipped. Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, photo credit. And a small sidebar, Humane Society of Decatur and Macon County. To volunteer or make donations, call 217-876-0000 or visit the Humane Society of Decatur and Macon County website. On to the local page, a two farmers welcome rain deluge. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. A two-inch rain deluge pounded central Illinois Sunday evening, downing the occasional tree and causing some problems while farmers welcomed the wet relief from above. Well, that rain was definitely a much-needed rain, said Tim Stock, executive vice president of the Macon County Farm Bureau. After the intense heat we've had for the last couple of weeks, the corn crop definitely needed a reprieve and needed a shot of moisture to continue growing. Stock said corn was the crucial stage of tasseling out for pollination, and a healthy dose of moisture was essential to the plant's development. And the soybeans definitely needed a good shot of water just to keep growing and keep putting pods on the plants, he added. The rainfall we got was great, but we could definitely use some more. The Herald and Review has seen some pictures of crops flattened in the wind gusts that accompanied Sunday's storm front, and Stock said he had heard rumors of crop damage. But speaking Monday, he said he was not aware of any widespread problems so far. Among other damage reported, a fallen tree dragged down power cables on Spittler Park Drive in Mount Zion, sparking a localized power outage that affected more than 300 homes before the lights came back on late Sunday night. And the National Weather Service said a house in Mattoon was damaged after a tree fell on it. Keep watching the skies. Tammy Schneider, a coordinator for the Macon County Emergency Management Agency, said the area around Decatur appeared to escape any serious damage. She contrasted the heavy rain here with the biblical deluge devastating Texas in a sea of death and destruction, and said the tragedy unfolding out west served as a timely reminder to pay attention to weather alerts. And while we don't necessarily face those kinds of flooding risks here locally, we do face risks from tornadoes, Schneider said. It's very easy to become complacent when sirens go off and be like, yeah, whatever. But being aware of rapidly changing conditions is essential. We're quick to forget, but tornado events are devastating when they hit. She said families must equip themselves with more than one way of receiving emergency information and know the difference between storm watches and warnings. She also said to load your cell phone with a weather alert app, have a NOAA, National Oceanic Association Weather Radio and monitor local media for alerts. And just pay attention when you know there are going to be thunderstorms that day, Schneider added. The National Weather Service in Lincoln said Decatur Airport logged precisely 2 inches of rain Sunday evening, and after a slightly below average rainfall for the year up until July 6th, the total now stood at 6.28 inches, about 1.14 inches ahead of normal for this point. Meteorologist Ben Dubelbeis said there was a chance of more storms Tuesday through Friday, with the possibility Friday storms might be more severe, and the suffocating humidity will return for most of the week as well. Ironically, back at the Macon County Farm Bureau, rain on Friday is precisely the news they don't want to hear. While more precipitation is still welcome, the farmers are hoping it hits any time but Friday evening. That is when the Devon Amphitheater in Decatur is hosting country star Clint Black for a fundraiser concert for the Macon County Farm Bureau Foundation. Tickets are still available. On to the news page, obstruction plea leads to 2 years of prison. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. The Decatur drug dealer who sold methamphetamine to a former professional golfer and then fled after an accomplice shot the customer to death has been sent to prison for 2 years. John E. Inman, 41, had been facing murder charges in the April 15, 2024, killing of 65-year-old Daryl D. Coon Jr. at his home in the 800 block of South Jasper Street. But the defendant took a plea deal June 24th that saw those charges dropped, along with further counts of aggravated battery with a firearm and armed robbery. He pleaded guilty instead to a newly added charge of obstructing justice. Inman told Decatur Police Department detectives that on the day he sold Coon meth, he had been accompanied by Trimerion D. Howell. He said his 21-year-old accomplice saw Coon had money and then pulled a gun in a robbery attempt. Coon had been shot 7 times. Howell appeared June 18th in Macon County Circuit Court and pleaded guilty to murder. He was sentenced to 45 years in prison, but objected, trying to fire his defense attorney and telling presiding judge Thomas Griffith he had been misled about the details of his own plea deal. "I'm okay with serving 20 years," he had told Griffith, "but I am not okay with a life sentence. That 45-year sentence must be served at 100%, and Howell said he plans to appeal. Emergency alerts and test plans, calls, and texts. Donette Beckett, Decatur. The Macon County Emergency Telephone System Board will be conducting the annual emergency alert test at 11 a.m. Thursday, July 10th. Residents who signed up online and residents with landline telephones will receive the test alerts. Cell phone users will not receive the messages unless they are registered online. The alerts will be used during the event of an emergency within the county, including chemical leaks, active shooter situations, and significant weather events. Information will include important life-saving messages. To sign up for the emergency alerts, visit sheriff-macon-il.us. From the State House, Rich Miller publishes Capital Facts, a daily political newsletter, and CapitalFacts.com. Mitchell, the chosen one to battle for Pritzker. Christian Mitchell has had strong detractors ever since Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle elevated the young black man out of obscurity and backed him for the Illinois House in 2012. Preckwinkle chose her trusted aide Mitchell over appointed Rep. Kimberly Debuclay D. Chicago. Preckwinkle's move upset a lot of people in that part of the world because the Debuclay family's local influence had been strong for decades and Mitchell was not a born Southsider. As a result, I somewhat derisively referred to Mitchell as, quote, the chosen one, unquote, in a story I wrote for my subscribers back in the day. Mitchell's first House primary race was a proxy battle between Preckwinkle and the Jesse Jackson family, and the man was that close And man, was that close race ever heated. He was a brassy, highly educated amateur boxer who didn't take any guff whatsoever. Mitchell then went on to win two successive Democratic primary races against a Chicago Teachers Union-backed candidate. The enemy's list grew as Mitchell fought all opponents tooth and nail. The complaints really started to fly in 2019 when he was chosen as one of newly elected J.B. Pritzker's deputy governors. Statehouse denizens, most of them white men, who were accustomed to deference, were shocked at Mitchell's in-your-face negotiating style and fierce loyalty to his boss. I lost count of the number of white men who reached out with stories about the brash Pritzker lieutenant. But hey, Mitchell helped pass a lot of bills. He drove some very powerful folks up a wall during the intense negotiations over the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, but he got the bill done. Now that he's been chosen as Governor Pritzker's running mate, I asked Mitchell last week if he believes he has bridges to build. I am proud to have been a tough negotiator in some very difficult rooms trying to get the best deal for Illinois and for working families, for taxpayers. I'm not going to apologize for that, Mitchell said. But Mitchell said he's a different person since he left politics in 2023. Are there times when I spoke when I should have listened? I think the answer is absolutely. Mitchell pledged to be far more open in the future. Anybody who wants to have a conversation, wants to reach out, wants to do well on behalf of the people of Illinois, I'm going to greet them with an open hand, and I'm going to remember to listen more than I speak. And I'm really excited to work with everybody, even people with whom we may have had some past friction. Mitchell was a fearless boxer back in the day, and he audaciously used the Chosen One moniker I gave him when promoting two charity fights. Asked if he still boxes, Mitchell said, "I do not. I've been off for a few months. I had a wrist injury, but I'm hoping to start back next Friday." I jokingly wondered aloud whether his wrist injury was from breaking somebody's skull. "I did not," he said. "I don't spar that often anymore," Mitchell said, alluding to the fact that he was getting a bit too old to spar. "But I still love to hit the bag, and I love shadow boxing. It's how I relax." And now he's the chosen one all over again as the billionaire governor's running mate and possible successor should Pritzker win the presidency or is appointed to a cabinet position. Mitchell has a lot of work to do, but he seems committed to pulling this off. Asked what his role would be in the upcoming campaign, Mitchell said, "My role is going to be to go everywhere, to talk to everyone, to articulate the issues across the state of Illinois, to meet people in their houses, at their churches, on the steps, or on the stoop in the town square, and ultimately it's going to be to articulate the message that the governor is putting forward about continuing the progress we've made over the last 7 years, protecting that progress, investing in the jobs of the future, and making sure that we have a 21st century education and healthcare system that people can afford. That's going to be my role." If Pritzker does somehow move up, or even if he doesn't and retires, Mitchell will need the support of powerful people and groups in 2030 who thoroughly despised him when he was a deputy governor. The chosen one will then have to stand on his own. However, he's always been the chosen one for good reason. Kind of a fun article on the weather page under the books section. Feast your eyes. 5 recent cookbooks that invite you to travel the world through food. Nicole Hivitson, the Minnesota Star Tribune, has this article. One of the best ways to introduce yourself to a new place or culture is through food. Whether you're traveling the state, globe, or just across the metro, the restaurants, markets, and little corner shops at your destination can be a window into another world. You can have a similar experience in the comfort of your kitchen, too. Exploring recipes with global flavors and ingredients is almost like traveling to a faraway place, but without the need for a passport. The only requirement is the sense of adventure. Several recent cookbooks are ready to transport you to the kitchens of Korea, France, Greece, Italy, and more. Umma, A Korean Mom's Kitchen Wisdom and 100 Family Recipes by Sarah Ahn and Nam Soon Ahn The Beautiful Uma, a Korean Mom's Kitchen. Wisdom in 100 Family Recipes is from Sarah An and her mother Nam Sum An. Reading the book makes you feel like you're part of their conversations with the benefit of getting a personal cooking lesson. You'll walk away wanting to become fluent in Korean cuisine as well, since it's from the always methodical America's Test Kitchen. That possibility is not out of reach. Next up is Mostly French Recipes from a Kitchen in Provence by McKenna Held. Anyone who's harbored dreams of new beginnings should look to Held for inspiration. She bought La Pichoune, Julia Child's summer home in France, in Provence, France, rather, in 2016 after she came across a listing for it in the New York Times. Now she operates the home as a courageous cooking school, a name that gives a glimpse of her cooking style. Anyone who believes French cooking is all about fuss will be delightfully swayed by Mostly French. Yasu by Shaylee Lipa. Yasu is the Greek expression for a casual hello or goodbye, and an appropriate name for Lipa's cookbook. She explores her Greek heritage to give us an authentic taste of the cuisine, which takes a less-is-more approach to both flavors and techniques, from grilled meats and stuffed vegetables to can't-miss sweets and cook-with-the-seasons-menu mentality. You'll understand why embracing a Mediterranean diet is never a bad idea. And there's a photo here. It says chicken souvlaki from Yasu, Amazon.com photo credit. So the chicken skewers are shown on a plate with a salad, but what really stands out on the entire page is the cover of the Yasu book. It's a light blue background with a Greek pattern in a circle in the middle, and in the center of it is what looks like a spinach pie, a spanakopita, so crinkly phyllo pastry that's been buttered and cooked in the oven and cut into several wedges, and one of them is being moved to the side, so there's a slight gap that's shown. It's very appetizing. Let's see here. Sesame by Rachel Simons. Anyone who has finished a dish with a dash of sesame oil knows the power of the ingredient. Simons, co-founder of Seed Plus Mill in New York, goes all in with sesame global recipes and stories of an ancient seed, her first cookbook. Guided by her heritage and love of travel and learning, she brings us recipes that use sesame in ways you wouldn't expect. And finally, Backroads Italy by Christopher Kimball and J.M. Hirsch. Kimball and Hirsch went off the beaten path to bring us Milk Street Backroads Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. It is a mouth-watering guide to the country's cuisine, whether you want to cook from it at home or use it as a guide to plan a culinary trip to Italy. The recipes are approachable, the photographs welcoming, the history lessons fascinating, and the travel bug will be relentless. Here's an interesting article, Netflix adding NASA rocket launches. Articles by Wendy Lee, Los Angeles Times. Netflix is already home to popular dramas like Squid Game, movies, and live boxing matches. The next frontier for the streamer? Live rocket launches from NASA. The streaming giant is teaming up with the agency to bring space into viewers' living rooms, including with views of Earth from the International Space Station, to its vast content offering as the company treks further into the realm of live TV. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed. Content from streaming service NASA Plus, which includes rocket launches, astronaut spacewalks, and mission coverage, will be coming to the Los Gatos, California-based streaming service this summer. The National Aeronautics and Our Space Act of 1958 calls on us to share our story of space exploration with the broadest possible audience, said Rebecca Sermons, general manager of NASA Plus, in a statement. Together, we are committed to a golden age of innovation and exploration, inspiring new generations right from the comfort of their couch or in the palm of their hands from their phone. The content could fit in with the streamer's other educational content, including documentaries and programs targeting families, including Sesame Street and Ms. Rachel. Children's programming has been a growth area for Netflix as it encroaches on the traditional broadcaster's turf. Netflix last year said it had more than 301 million subscribers. On Monday, the streamer said its audience encompasses more than 700 million people. NASA Plus continues to be available for free on its website and on the NASA app. Space-related nonfiction programming has a long history for film and television viewers, whether through IMAX Museum documentaries and Public Broadcasting's storied Nova franchise. And there's a small color photo here, the NASA logo at the entrance to the Kennedy Space Visitor Center, Cape Canaveral, Florida. A space shuttle rocket booster is in the background. Dreamstime, TNS, photo credit. Well, that was kind of fun. So anyone who's into rocket launches and space exploration will have that option now on Netflix. Nation and World Washington, Epstein list doesn't exist. Justice Department walks back theory that Bondi promoted. Eric Tucker and Elena Durkin-Richer, Associated Press, Washington. Jeffrey Epstein did not maintain a client list, the Justice Department acknowledged Monday, as it said no more files related to the wealthy financier's sex trafficking investigation would be made public, despite promises from Attorney General Pam Bondi that raised the expectations of conservative influencers and conspiracy theorists. The acknowledgement that the well-connected Epstein did not have a list of clients to whom underage girls were trafficked represents a public walkback of a theory that the Trump administration helped promote, with Bondi suggesting in a Fox News interview this year that such a document was sitting on my desk for review, even as it released video from inside a New York jail meant to definitively prove that Epstein killed himself. The department also said in a memo that it refuses to disclose other evidence investigators collected. Bondi for weeks suggested more material was going to be revealed. It's a new administration and everything is going to come out to the public, she said at one point. After a first document dump, she hyped angered President Donald Trump's base by failing to deliver revelations. That episode, in which far-right influencers were invited to the White House in February and provided with binders marked the Epstein Files Phase 1 and declassified, that contained documents that largely were already been seen in the public domain, spurred conservative internet personalities to sharply criticize Bondi. After the first release fell flat, Bondi said officials were poring over a truckload of previously withheld evidence she said was handed over by the FBI. In a March TV interview, she claimed the Biden administration sat on these documents. No one did anything with them, adding, sadly, these people don't believe in transparency, but I think more unfortunately, I think a lot of them don't believe in honesty. But after a months-long review of evidence in the government's possession, the Justice Department determined that no further disclosure would be appropriate or warranted, the memo says. The department noted that much of the material was placed under seal by a court to protect victims, and only a fraction of it would have been aired publicly had Epstein gone to trial. One of our highest priorities is combating child exploitation and bringing justice to victims, the memo says. Perpetuating unfounded theories about Epstein serves neither of those ends. And with that, we have come to the end of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, July 8th, 2025. For this first half hour, we'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.